My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, AEW does an all-time low in the Lazy River. NXT sucked, according to me. And Invader Club this week, Tully and Arn versus Sting and Barry. If you like us, click the red circle link, kick us a buck. If you don't like us, please forget I said anything. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. How you doing?
This has been a weird week in terms of wrestling watching, in that big peaks and valleys in terms of quality. Yes. Here on the television. The middle of the week for me left me very, very cold, but I did enjoy Raw, and I enjoyed SmackDown. Paul Heyman, CM Punk, Solo. Yes. Sikoa. The Solo Sikoa stuff absolutely works. He's great. This is a good story. And this is actually, we were wondering, where does the bloodline go post WrestleMania? And we now have that answer. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely satisfying, at least for me.
I've been playing catch up all week because I've been in Vegas Tuesday, Monday night through Thursday. I played a couple of events in the World Series of Poker, and boy, Chris, I had more fun doing that. It just felt right. I didn't play particularly well in at least one of the tournaments. I played well my first Pot Limit Omaha tournament. I really enjoy Pot Limit Omaha. It's a lot more math. It's a lot more drawing.
Yeah. Omaha is complicated.
Yes.
I
like the complexity of it and not going overboard too early. I do like that. Unfortunately the match of the year was done at the dark match at AEW Dynamite, and I'm gonna read this to you, Chris, and you're gonna weep tears that we did not get a chance to watch this on television, even though it's probably been videotaped, and I'm trying to get Mookie to give it to me.
Did they do a reverse battle royal?
No, but it's interesting you say that. Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal and that crew versus the Outrunners.
Oh, that would have been a fun one.
Oh, come on, man. I had people sending me like phone videos, and I'm just like, and I'm crying because I want to see this on my television because the amount of stupidity on there, just I'm here for this type of stuff. Let's just get to the news and get to the, because we waited a little bit later in the week, a lot more news to talk about, oddly enough, and the ratings were a little bit late, and they were interesting. AEW Dynamite, June 19th, 502,000 viewers, 0.16 in P18 to 49 rating. NXT, June 18th, 724,000 viewers, 0.26, 18 to 49.
Oh, Dynamite, this is exciting.
Dynamite's was the lowest non-preempted show. There's a lot of people saying a lot of things. Some say the Kendrick Lamar concert may have kicked into this, but the problem with that is the low was coming from 34 to 49, and I'm not sure that's the demo for Kendrick Lamar. Maybe it is. I will.
A lot of people are plugged into this Kendrick Lamar Drake beef, but I don't necessarily think that
it's a better feud than anything on AEW Dynamite. Let's put it
that
way.
There's more heat. There's more heat. Narrative build.
It feels real.
Straight up, like the booking on the Kendrick Lamar Drake feud's great, right?
Yes.
I mean, it has these great beats. You know, like these story beats, and Kendrick keeps racing things with each new track. He keeps raising the ante, and like you just kind of feel this, you know, thing coming to a head. You're kind of wondering, you know, what's Drake ultimately, you know, how does this play out for Drake?
I mean, I'll go direct. I think Juneteenth now being, I think it's just a bank/federal holiday, may have had a lot to do with people traveling with things closed and stuff, but look, everybody's gonna
dude, you're gonna, talking about a cleavage of like a third of the audience.
Yeah, I know. I can't explain it. Because just, the show was actually pretty decent, I thought. You and I disagree a little bit on that.
Well,
on the
okay, so like, I think it's a momentum thing, right? Like,
that could,
I mean,
yes.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, it's not that this show was bad. It's that everything, you know, people maybe are getting fatigued. You know,
because NXT sucked hobo taint. I'm sorry. It was just terrible. It was a terrible show. I hated it.
Yeah.
Every minute of it. I was just like, there. I don't think there was anything redeeming except maybe Kalani Jordan's match. But the booking is just it was anger inducing. And I haven't been that angry at a wrestling show in a long, long time.
I mean, putting Ethan Page back into title contention was maybe the only thing that I thought was at least somewhat smart, but then we established
but
that stupid faction.
But then also how you're doing it too,
yep,
where the
yep,
like beating Javon Edwards, and you're just like, or Evans, sorry.
Yeah, and then establishing a faction around Paige. You know, we're doing that whole thing, and like, I don't think he needs a faction. I think he needs to be like, you know, glorious Bobby Roode, just an obnoxious heel champion.
Yeah, I'd be good with that, and I don't like. Remind me who's in the faction.
It's Sean Spears.
Oh, it's the AEW guys.
AEW guys, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I was thinking maybe they threw somebody in there that wasn't AEW, but they
no,
didn't.
No. It's like ex-AEW guys. It's Spears,
which makes for cringe television. I don't want to hear about how, you know, they're the heels because they came from this other company that they didn't like. I'm just like, it's like what the Outcasts were doing on AEW television when they said, oh, things were so much better in WWE now that we're here. It's like, are you working against your own damn product? What is wrong
right
with you?
We have A-B tested this style of faction so many times now in the last five
main
years.
Main event mafia.
They're always a dud. They're always a dud.
They suck. Like, invasion
they
angles
suck
unless it's an actual invasion, and it's
it
not.
Has to be a hostile takeover. An invasion angle sucks. A
yes.
Hostile takeover is interesting.
Yes.
It's where a hijack angle is interesting, and an invasion is just a group of guys who are here to make trouble. They don't want to follow the rules.
We're here to cause chaos.
Yeah.
Whoopty crap. Okay. Anyways, we'll talk about that in the Lazy River. Yeah. Something I missed last week in the news that's interesting. Io Sky will be performing at Big Marigold Show versus Utami Hayashishita, I think is how you say it, in the first kind of WWE crossover with Rossi Ogawa's new promotion. Also, publicly, Bayley has said she'd love to work a show in Japan because when she was originally scheduled to work Japan, that is when she was signed to NXT. I think Io's going to be good for that promotion. I'm not the biggest Rossi Ogawa fan in the world. We'll see. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, I think Bayley could be a sneaky big draw.
Bayley would be a good draw for them.
Yeah.
Io, I think this is going to be all angle heavy to try and get somebody from Marigold to now join Damage Control. And trust me, there's a screaming weirdo Io. Best part of Raw for me. I don't know why. I just howl at her crazy screaming all the time and just her being the weirdo on there. I'm just like, she's playing a weirdo, but you don't believe she's a weirdo. And it's like one of those weird acting jobs that you're watching going, I am fascinated by, like Tom Hardy in the Bike Riders pro, where it's like, he decides to do Nick Cage from Peggy Sue Got Married and just put on a weird voice, That's EO acting crazy on Raw for me. So
it's bizarre making her the leader of the faction now, to me. Like, Dakota's just a bunch of obvious,
yes,
much more obvious fit for this. And the I think maybe even the meeting was sort of like, let's zig instead of zag here. But the idea that EO's controlling the faction by just being psychotic and yelling at everybody all the time.
She's the leader because the leader's afraid of her. That's
Yeah, right. Like,
we need a change. Rah! Runs off. Just love her. Caleb Braxton leaving the WWE next week, as announced on her Instagram. She's currently working under a verbal agreement as her contract has expired. She is actually out here in Los Angeles, and she's been working the open mic circuit doing stand-up comedy. So I think she's looking for Hollywood opportunities right now. She looks fantastic right now. And she is now represented by Paradigm, which is one of the big agencies. I think CM Punk just signed with Paradigm as well for acting roles across the board. And I believe Tiffany Stratton also recently just signed with Paradigm. So there's a weird now open door policy for WWE people to go get representation and look for outside work, which under Vince always wanted his taste, like the mob. So that's interesting. But I think Caleb Braxton is I thought her strength was panel shows and keeping control of panels and doing like the Raw after show or the SmackDown after show when she was doing it, and the Bump. And she was never really a great backstage type of person, but she was great on the panel shows. But best of luck to her in her future endeavors. Any thoughts? Was your favorite Caleb Braxton moment, Chris?
Oh god, there was that one time where I believe it was Ridge Holland coming to the ring, and Caleb Braxton just did a wonderful job announcing that he was arriving.
Actually, her and Heyman had great chemistry on the
that
SmackDown.
That is true. Her and Heyman were always a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Heyman liked dressing her down or what. Heyman's really good about making sure that the interviewer has some sort of personality dynamic,
yes,
some sort of thing against him.
Makes them look like a million bucks versus a robot, yeah, or something. Yeah, it's always...
Yeah, he essentially puts them over as figures.
You know what he does is he asks them a question. And then they have to respond. And that's the thing that always made like the Okerlund interview so great is because Okerlund would push a wrestler and a wrestler would come right back at them.
This is honestly a thing that
also
Vince
Lance
has
Russell.
Lost.
That was
Vince
also
sort of lost, yeah, track of this, where you gotta get your interviewers over too.
Yeah.
Like they had to get, I mean, obviously they can't be outsmarting all of the wrestlers like too much or whatever, but you need to establish that they're not just like wispy, you know, waifs that you just push over.
Pretty mannequins that are just there to say, my guest at this time is Drew McIntyre.
Or
Drew, you're about
doofus
to go into a match with CM Punk. How do you feel? And then
honestly,
goes,
it's way
I
more
feel?
Interesting to have a woman who is, you know, like a woman juxtaposed against these big, you know, hyper-masculine men, cutting them down to size a little bit.
I want Lois Lane coming in there and just,
like Drew McIntyre thinks he's got a brilliant plan, and then Caleb Braxton sort of goes, well, what happens if he does this? And then Drew McIntyre's like, I'm going to the ring now. Like, yeah.
I don't know.
Exactly. Like, that's how you get interviewers over, and thus that helps better, you know, serve as a juxtaposition against the wrestlers that you're trying to get over too.
Yeah. I encourage, I mean, even like they've been using Saxton a lot more of late on, I believe, SmackDown and also the pay-per-views. And I think Saxton can play that kind of role where he's feeding a guy to get made to look stupid sometimes in terms of being the straight man. So I'm for more of that. And AEW needs to work on that a lot, in my opinion, even with Renee, who I like Renee a lot. I think, I don't know if she's the best backstage interviewer, but I like her. I mean, she has personality,
she
at least,
to
which
be
is more
good on the panel shows. So
yes.
Like, the problem, okay. The problem with AEW to me remains lack of direction, which then begets lack of quality utilization. It's not like Renee can't do this, because we saw her 10 years ago.
No, she's
absolutely
good.
Adding and crushing the dynamic on all those co-shows on Raw. Like, yeah. So she can friggin' do this. And I don't think it's just exclusive to a panel show. I think she can immerse herself in the universe, know how to engage these wrestlers as though they are like real people and real characters, and ask these wrestlers questions that they can answer. You know what I mean? Like questions that they can reasonably answer and stuff. And it goes back to, if you're not having direction coming from the top, all this shit just happens segment to segment.
Here's the studio or the producer note I would give. I would go, stop thinking that you're a daytime morning host and you're there to be nice and friendly with it. Act like you need a promotion in this gig and you need a scoop of somehow, and then go after the questions and then see how your mindset changes when you do your part. But I'm laughing because I'm looking at this next story. WWE filed a trademark in response to the trademark from last week. Last week, Hikuleo's trademark appeared to be Tala Tonga. This week, on Friday, Longa Tonga.
Yes! We are one away from Shorta Tonga. We are not we have Tala Tonga, Longa Tonga, we need Shorta Tonga.
We need Ronga Tonga. We need Ronga Tonga.
Ronga Tonga?
We need Tonga? We need Rob Van Dam to come in as Bonga Tonga.
Yeah. Like
Stronga Tonga?
Stronga Tonga, right? Weaka Tonga, that he can be older.
The surfer one, we can make Billabonga
Mama
Tonga.
Mama Tonga, Grandpa
Mama
Tonga.
Yes, we can make it like the Dudleys from ECW.
It's somewhere between the Donkey Kong family and the Dudleys is what we need the
Tonga. Konga Tonga, there we go.
Donkey Konga Tonga.
Donkey Konga Tonga.
Oh my God. Like that's right there. How do you have Konga Tonga and not just go with that? Push this man to the moon.
Hire us.
I want Duo Sokoa. I want Trio Sokoa. Quartet Sokoa. Quad Sokoa. Yeah. Like, let's make these Samoan names as brain dead as humanly possible.
Yes, because that won't be seen as discriminatory.
Oh my God. How is this a real story?
Ping Ponga Tonga?
Ponga Tonga? you can have a porn one, Schlonga Tonga?
No. Oh God, no.
there's so many options.
Ronga Tonga.
Ronga Tonga?
Who's he? He's the one who makes all the bad decisions in the family.
He's the Fredo. They have to whack Ronga Tonga. Going into WrestleMania,
they're in a boat. You just see Toa Leona. He's the Al Neri of the bloodline. Standing behind him. And Solo just gives a little nod, and he's out fishing, just sitting there, just panned to a gunshot.
This is a good storyline. How are they coming up with such stupid names? Jesus.
Oh my God.
Like, all they have to do is get these people normal names. And by normal, I mean like culturally appropriate, not pun based names.
Remind me, I can't think of it. The Australian kid on SmackDown,
Grayson Waller.
Billabonga Tonga. Our surfing cousin from Australia. Hey.
Okay. Dante Chen could be Hong Konga Tonga.
No. Oh my God. We've solved all the problems of WWE. Congratulations. Yeah,
great.
I'm so happy for all of us here at Shake the Ropes. I really am. Yes. You know what this is? This is Tim Kazarinsky's old bit, and we're going to have to pay him at least a dollar. God. Sorry. And comings and goings and injuries and whatnot. Seth Rollins returning at the opening segment of Raw. Looks like he's going to be ready for SummerSlam. Leo Rush seems to be back in the good graces of AEW. Says that he and, or Fightful reporting that he and Tony Khan smooths things over. Gigi Dolan, a victim of the Performance Center torn ACL monster that everybody gets to because they're doing too many dumb drills. On SmackDown, Jacob Fatu making his debut as the newest member of the Bloodline. Not Konga Tonga. And then,
not yet. Not Diddy Konga Tonga.
And then over on NXT, Joe Hendry and Frankie Kazarian in the Battle Royal booked like complete opposite should have been. And then, of course, the ending of Raw, the big reveal of the theme park Halloween Wyatt Six.
Oh my god.
Any thoughts on any of those, Chris?
Dude, I am already completely done with the Wyatts.
I like Bray. I don't hold him up to some superior standard of some sort of.
No, I just this WWE world that they have built has two factions that are great. They have two A storylines that are pretty killer. You have Solo Sikoa and his hijacking of the Bloodline on SmackDown, which is a wonderful, multifaceted, well-performed, well-executed storyline that has woven in CM Punk and Cody Rhodes. It serves as this narrative through line up and down the card. It is complete. You can tweak around stuff, but the actual top to bottom on the Solo Sikoa storylines, wonderful. It's wonderful. Same thing, honestly, to me with the Judgment Day on Raw. The Judgment Day, you know, between Cody Rhodes and the Judgment Day, you have enough stuff going on there that top to bottom of this card, we are narratively complete. That all the other stuff, all your little B lines and stuff, they can branch off, but like you have this A storyline on Raw that is more than sufficient to fuel everything up and down the tree.
And some of them have little bits of real, real goodness. Like I would point out like the Karrion Kross New Day story.
Like that story. That story's good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean,
Otis and Chad is going to be what it is, but I really there's little hints of dissension everywhere, and I had this.
Yeah, no, Woods and Kofi having that, like Woods and Kofi, that little beat.
Had that little moment that was so good. And you know what? I have this for the Lazy River.
And Karrion Kross basically baited.
Karrion Kross is a hell of a promo when you get out of the TikTok stuff because he's clever. He's endearing in a way. It's very Sean O'Hare, if you remember that.
That was actually what I was about to say. It's like Sean O'Hare done better. Sean O'Hare's character, I think we all look back pretty fondly at those initial promos, and there's a lot of stuff there that I like is pretty cool.
And then he
cool.
got to the interaction, and then you thought he was actually the devil. And it's like, no, that's not what you want here.
No, that's not what you want here, right? Like, no, you want someone who's basically the devil's advocate, who's basically always planting the seeds, and they have something going on there. And like, also he's baiting and manipulating people. And like, I love that he manipulated Kofi by it. Like Kofi's response makes a lot of sense that like Kross wouldn't keep his name out of his mouth. And so Kofi was like, basically Kofi wanted to step up because Kross kept talking shit, not realizing that like Kross was
there's a drive in Woods.
There's a bait. Yeah, there's a play. There's a play here.
And you know what? It's such a great story because remember, like Woods wanted so badly to be King of the Ring.
One
year, you know he has those solo, aspirations.
And he's been King of the Ring, but he has those.
Yeah,
and he's good. Kross is really good, and it's one of these things where it's like the more he subdues it, the less. Frankly, the less Wyatt-y it is, the better it is.
Yes.
I mean, like they've done this. Like, we look at the Wyatts. Why am I getting just an initial revulsion to this? We can talk about more of this stuff, too. I'm not kind of done with all those thoughts. But look at, like, the Authors of Pain and the Karrion Kross faction. The more it's gotten away from, we do the black and white entrance.
Yes.
like all of that shit. And we move to, these are just like, you've got Karrion Kross, this manipulative guy. You have his female companion who also manipulates
his muse, and
his muse, and she and him are manipulators. And then they've got their two heavies, and then you have the old wise man who's sort of like, like, it's a good dynamic.
It's a nice dynamic. It's what Kevin Sullivan wanted to be when he, in the '80s, without the camp of it.
Yeah.
You know, like the you know, coming out of the water and bringing, you know, I forgot the guy's name, but it's just like, you know, he'd do all these spooky things. Yeah, it's more, they're more evil than spooky, and that's right. What makes it.
Less is more. I want to be real clear.
That
I don't
too. Think, subtlety makes it.
People don't want realism, but what I really do think, whether you are a sicko or a broader consumer of wrestling, people actually seem to be responding fan-wise much more to a more believable type of characterization. Like the Judgment Day guys feel like guys you would know. Like you could
they
actually
feel like a motorcycle gang is what they feel
right.
Like
but like Dominic ways. Mysterio feels like your doofus friend who you might actually know. Like he doesn't feel like a guy who I don't know lives in a weird tower on a hill or something.
He's the high school kid who is always socially awkward, and the hot chick is using him to get something.
Right. I've seen that
trope in movies a million times.
I'm way more interested in stories involving that guy than the man who lives in the mysterious tower on the top of the hill, and now he's going to have a wrestling match. Like I don't care. Like, this is like
seeing Malachi Black World or whatever.
Right. You know, like the Malachi Black World and like all the spooky, ooky stuff to me in this decade is reminiscent of like Vince McMahon's predilections of taking like the Repo Man and the Dumpster Man and putting them in a wrestling ring. I don't care about like, I mean, I like The Undertaker. I'm not saying The Undertaker was bad, but like outside, The Undertaker was a fluke. Outside of that, I actually don't care about other professionals.
But he was also place wrestlers. But he was also place in time. I mean, he wasn't the occupational wrestler who was an Undertaker. It played into that whole moral majority Satanist fear stuff that you could get, you know, that you got into, but it was subtle about it. It wasn't, you know, the Undertaker, you know, worships the devil and stuff, you know. It was just
also true,
you know, he was just kind of dark. We are way into the lazy river of wrestling criticism.
So let's continue on this Wyatt thing then, right? Like, so I mean, the other part of this is now the Wyatts are backstage knocking out and attacking everyone. So
they
now
they kill Chad Gable. They shot him Chad in the head, I think.
We are like subverting all of these other storylines from the tree that we have built and rebranching them onto this Wyatt crap to have like what? Joe Gacy, Bo Dallas, and Eric Rowan have matches against these guys?
Yeah.
What is the here? I don't care that they look cool. We still are talking about, I like Joe Gacy, so like no knock on Joe Gacy.
No, it's no haven't knock. And I like Bo, Eric Redbeard personally.
I haven't seen Bo. You know, Eric Redbeard's a cool guy. Yeah, no, like Bo, I haven't seen wrestle in a minute, so I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt here. But like, this is not shit that I have been eagerly awaiting to see for minutes here. Joe Gacy, I like, want to see more of him, think that he has other chapters in his career to go through, and he's had some really quality matches in NXT. Dijak and Gacy was a great match, so like he has actually had really quality work here, but I just don't eagerly await to see the Judgment Day clash against the Wyatts.
You know, the evil Chuck E. Cheese / Five Nights at Freddy's guys as the main event act in a professional wrestling organization wearing their weird costumes, and it's like, you know, I don't.
And I already saw the Rabbit Tribe on Lucha Underground.
Yes.
So like,
oh,
basically, no, this is a combination of FNAF, the Wyatts, and the Rabbit Tribe on Lucha Underground.
And maybe the, was it the Black Lotus crew a little bit?
No, I mean, like the Rabbit Tribe basically was all of these, especially since they're leaning so heavily into the Alice in Wonderland stuff.
Yes.
We've been there and done that 10 years ago, right down to the weird rabbit looking mask and stuff. For me, this was And okay, the production quality on it was nice. The cinematography, one of the things that I think has been lovely about this post Kevin Dunn era of Raw and SmackDown is that we are getting much better production values.
Yes.
Just much better. All the little stuff gets good.
The Drew Punk thing was fantastic.
God, yeah,
on SmackDown. I absolutely adored that.
SmackDown was great.
Yeah.
I don't care who they're going to feud with. I don't want to really see them take up bandwidth. And I hate that this ended with them beating up guys like Chad Gable and other people who are in B storylines.
I think he's the only name that they beat up. The other people were extras. But I mean,
try to turn him.
No. Well, at first they were leaning in because I swore one of them was Gunther, but they're trying to tease that everybody was beat up for a reason. But now they're only leaning into Chad Gable was the only name guy who was beat up, and there's a reason for that. And there's five people, and it's called Wyatt Six, even though I think Bray is the unofficial six member. I get the feeling we may be going from bad to worse with Chad Gable.
Chad Gable. No, I know. I have that same feeling.
Talking turtle who wrestles. Isn't he cute? You know.
I thought when Vince was gone that we were going to escape the Shorty G level crap with this guy. But yeah. He is getting the Daniel Bryan treatment. This is when Bryan joined the Wyatts. You have this great wrestler who's actually very talented, slightly undersized, and people actually really enjoy him. Every time we're allowed to like him, we really like him.
Yeah.
And now we're going to make him do spooky, ooky crap.
Let me get my one other major negative thing out of the way, because there's a lot to praise on the WWE side of the ledger, and this isn't AEW, but this is NXT, and this is my essay written like a second grader, Why I Hated NXT. So we introduced Joe Hendry with the big thing and instantly eliminated him in the Battle Royal. And we keep Frankie Kazarian in there.
Thank God we had 20 minutes of Frankie Kazarian.
Four ages in there. We last week we beat Wesley clean as a sheet with Joe Coffey giving him the discus lariat. 1, 2, 3. And now we're right back to Wesley versus Obafemi. We beat Javon Evans after getting his big moment as number one contender clean against Ethan Page. So I assume he's getting inserted into
that
match.
And once again, this guy makes a stupid decision when it comes to his career. Because like that, the first week was a dumb decision where he just wanted a title match. And now this was a complete unforced error where he was like, yeah, it doesn't matter that my ribs are hurt.
I'm going to brave it out.
Even though I'm already the number one contender, I'm going to brave it out with no clear advantage of this other than being suckered in by pride.
Yes.
Ethan Page is the guy who's called all ego, but like, what is more egotistical than being undersized with broken ribs and thinking you can beat a fully healthy guy who's bigger than you and fresh?
And there is something in this in the water over there, and I don't know what it is, and I was really going to nail on this before Carmelo Hayes made it into Money in the Bank last night. But there's something in the HBK Triple H ecosystem that still has that lingering Vince thing where we can't push guys too quickly because they either have to pay their dues or they're not the right type to push. I don't know if that's necessarily the truth in NXT, but why are we beating Wesley and Javon Edwards, who are two of our brightest, youngest guys, to guys that don't matter in the long run of things?
Like, to me,
it feels, you know what it feels like?
The Javon Edwards thing, right?
That's Trick Williams being protected in their mind,
yes,
I think.
They're protecting Trick, but like, you know, if you want to do this better, right, you have Ethan Page just beat the crap out of Javon Edwards.
Yes.
Yeah, right? Like, basically sideline him and go like, doesn't matter that he's number one contender because you can't be number one contender if you can't wrestle. And let's do this again next week. Like, essentially, what I would do...
I would have belted
Ethan Page at the
point. Yes,
but
yes.
We'll protect
we both agree
Williams.
On that.
Yeah,
yes.
Right. But like, so absent that, now I would be deep into the Ethan Page reign of terror, where anytime anyone else tries to become number one contender, Ethan Page sidelines them. It is basically like, there will be no number one contender other than Ethan Page. I am number one contender, and I'm proving this by crippling every single person in the way. And basically, Trick Williams has to give Ethan Page the match because he has broken down the entire like chain of contention at this point.
Charlie Dempsey is doing deaf jokes.
Oh, my God.
Chase, you are liars once again and being deceitful. And then we have that. But we open up with Roxanne Perez and Lola Vice. And last week, Lola Vice, who was a heel, and then teamed with Shayna Baszler and then wanted to shake her butt, teams with Roxanne Perez. And all of a sudden, Roxanne Perez then turns on Lola Vice, and it wasn't built out, and there was no relationship or mutual respect.
Dude,
or any story.
How we missed with the characterization of her? Lola Vice, to me,
if she just wants to dance, let her dance, and then
she's
let
not
her kick
she's not quite
off.
Yeah, she's not quite a can't miss talent, but goddamn,
she's
really close.
She's very close.
Right. She's really close. I know that. I mean. She's got the look. She actually has a good in-ring style whenever they're not doing stupid crap with her with the match format.
Oh, her kicks are fantastic.
Yeah, I know. Her action looks good. And, you know, she has the star power quality. She's not a bad promo either. But, like, pick a lane. What are we doing with her? Is she a face? Is she a heel? What are her motivations? And stick with it. Stick with it. I just want her laser focused at killing Roxanne right now. And when Roxanne went for that backhand, Lola should have had better reflexes than her, ducked her, and then knocked Roxanne out. And Roxanne needs to, basically, this should have been the opposite direction where Lola has Roxanne's number. And we have that as the slow burn. Not Roxanne has Lola's number.
You know what? May I now take another moment and transition that into AEW Dynamite a little bit before we get into any main roster stuff for Raw?
Sure.
Because pick a lane and stick to it is, as I said, I overall liked the Will Ospreay swerve promo in a bubble. I was watching it in a casino workout room live. I thought it came off well, and then I thought about it, and I went, no. Because last week, Will Ospreay, cocksure, you know, arrogant, I can hold these two belts, blah, 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 kind of a little bit heelish, swerve going, we're still friends, don't push it. This week, Will Ospreay, don't you dare talk about my family, and swerves back to breaking into people's houses and staring in their cribs and threatening children.
On Juneteenth, like the disconnect of like, I'm here repping Juneteenth, this basically, and I'm not like, yeah.
Oh,
like,
no,
I'm,
he said it. He said it.
I know. And they had a Juneteenth open.
Yes.
And then he's like, also, I'm the type of guy who takes cheap shots at your kids. If we don't see the total disconnect here.
I was so frustrated.
Message
by
me after the show. Please.
No, and that's like, a great. I had forgotten about that point, but yes, they opened the show with the branding about June.
He walks out.
Yes,
and he is babyface. I am like a role model type of guy, especially to a certain subset of the audience.
But tell your wife and kid I said hello.
Yeah. Tell your wife what's up.
Yeah. What?
If your kids need a real daddy, you know who to call. Like,
and to me, and we were talking a little bit about this pre-show. They're writing, and there's a term that I use. It's a television term, but like they're getting notes from the studio. But in this case, the studio might be Twitter. It might be podcasts that they listen to and review podcasts and things of that nature. But it
feels so reactive. It's not just reactive. Key phrases. It's the way things characterizations shift dramatically.
And it felt like, oh wow, we kind of went hard on our baby face last week. We need to do the opposite this week. And this is the stuff that AEW tribalists will come to me and go, well, it's complex storytelling and people aren't always friends. I'm like, they haven't even shown them to be friends once. You don't get to tell that story and make it up in your head. And it's kind of the same with the Bucks. The Bucks have now taken over AEW story, where it's like Chris Daniels is out there one week and now he's not there because it feels like he got such a negative reaction last week.
But the thing is, Chris Daniels isn't out there, but then commentary, meanwhile, is establishing repeatedly that matches can't happen unless Khan and Chris Daniels say they can. So when the Bucks come out and say, we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, we're going to do this, you have Excalibur telling me, actually, it doesn't matter that they want to do this. This has to somehow go through Tony Khan's hands, which then really begs questions about why things are happening. Yeah. And this is not complex storytelling. It's inconsistent. Going back to Ospreay and Swerve, same idea here. It's not complex when both Swerve and Will Ospreay are basically victims of the same story. They both have factions that it turns out in reality they can't trust. But Ospreay, even more uncompelling, can't seem to connect that Don Callis is a bad guy. that even though literally all of the same fans who chant for him boo the shit out of Don Callis, you know, somehow Ospreay can't connect those dots.
You know what we need
is we
need Ospreay to come out, come back into the back, into the Callis family locker room. Hey, guys, pretty good segment back there, right? And just leave, and everybody's just kind of steaming at him instead of just they're in the back steaming at Don Callis. You need to take care of this. Now, the one segment Callis was in that I liked was the Roosh segment. If Callis can be serious with Roosh, which I don't think he can be.
He can't. No, I know. Callis, theoretically, look, promo level wise, Don Callis absolutely could be a wonderful wonderful devil's advocate.
The Gary Hart we need.
The guy, yes, right. The guy you never like, that he has no redeemable qualities whatsoever, ever. And instead, like, he comes out
with the shoes.
Even the shoes would be fine as like sort of this campy, kitschy thing if he was kicking people with them and always hurting people. Like, the whole reason he has the spike shoes is so that he can kick people and use them as like a weapon outside the ring and that sort of thing. And like, if it was his heel sort of signature item, like Jim Cornette's,
like the J.J. Dillon shoes.
Right. But instead, we get him on commentary, sometimes doing straight commentary, sometimes doing wacky, zany heel stuff and being lovable goofus like bad guy. The inconsistent complexity is not inconsistency. And inconsistency is just zigging and zagging. Complexity is putting wrinkles into things that actually all federate into a straight line somehow. That is the problem with AEW for me in a lot of cases. And yet, like with Ospreay and Swerve now, it's like, who is the face? Who is the heel? Who do I want to win? Do I want the guy who is coming out trying to be the role model to all of the young African-American fan base who also has a penchant for home invasion? Or do I want the British guy who is sided with the guy who is the biggest prick on the show and a bunch of jerks and is apparently oblivious to the fact that his best friend is someone that everyone says is horrible? Like, which guy do I want to be my champion?
Push. There are no winners here.
Yeah, right. There's no winners here.
Yeah, I liked, I liked MJF Roosh as a match. I found the MJF Ospreay back up and turning, I found that a little contrived. I don't see, look, I love Hechicero. I think he's awesome. I don't see what a Hechicero MJF match gets. I mean, there's a real weird thing about this Forbidden Door show, and we'll preview it next week, where it feels like none of the CMLL people are going to get over, and then I think Naito beats Moxley for the IWGP title just to get off, and we'll go, oh, well, that's our one non-AEW win. But yeah, this Forbidden Door show, you know, it's fine. It's not.
Wait, are you trying to tell me that Naito and Moxley aren't red hot right now?
No, let me get a few quick things on Raw before we head to Vader Club. Number one, I really liked that on Raw they showed the social media stuff. The CM Punk thing with the referee shirt, they actually did the stuff where it's like, no, we're not just using social media to story expand. We're actually going to show it to you on the actual television screen. I really like that.
Damian Priest remains exceptional.
Priest and Liv was such a fantastic segment where he sends Dom off and he goes, you need to stop messing with the boy.
Yeah. Dude, it gets – I like every week both of them just get better and better as character
and
performances.
And she has gone to 11 yeah. on the sultry temptress. Yeah. Well, maybe he wants to be tempted. By, and I didn't think Liv Morgan had this in her. Priest is playing things – so he's playing it under and it's so great. Like he'll just make like a comment under his breath in Spanish that you know. And
we could have 15 minutes of Judgment Day segments every week on this show, like backstage stuff woven through. And it would be totally, I would be totally there.
Like JD is still kind of, you know, a red shirt, but he's like, he means well for the group. And Carlito,
and he's not
Carlito,
an idiot, right? Yeah, yeah. Carlito doesn't
know his place. He's still trying to be a probie. But the other guy, Finn, is getting some massive, great, bad lieutenant characterization here with grabbing the hotel key card. I'm coming after the championship. Just kidding, type of a thing.
I know.
He's got a nice little evil twinge to him now that he's not quote unquote the leader of this group. It almost feels like you kind of need it. It's great that it's leading up to Rhea, but you hope they don't split up before Rhea comes back.
No,
I kind of want
to
see.
No, I know you have to keep this whole thing together. Rhea needs to come back and find the whole kingdom in disarray
and go, what the hell happened?
Like essentially, like, and I mean, to me, what this kind of needs to build into too longer term, Rhea and Priest as platonic best friends, like they are actually just like dude and girl who are friends. Mad respect, having gone through a bunch of stuff. When the Judgment Day dissolves, they still always have respect and always kind of have each other's back as like homies. Like Rhea and Priest have like really good platonic friend chemistry, and she needs to come back, basically see everything crazy, go, Priest, what the hell is going on? And then Finn Balor does his power play and finally
yes.
turns on Priest.
He's making his move. He's like the he's the little finger or whatever.
And Finn makes the play because he went to the hotel room
yes.
with Liv, and he's been, no, he never hooked up with her. Instead, he's been playing this whole coup d'etat for the entire way down of essentially wait until Rhea comes back, and I will help you get Rhea if you help me get Priest and get
yes.
my action back.
Yes, it's so good.
It's so good. No, it's, and this is, again, why do we not need the Wyatts? Because we have a faction that's this damn good.
Yes.
Is this one of my favorite factions of all time now? The answer is
yes. Close. It's getting close.
It's a top five. It's a top five for me now.
I still don't know what Carlito's doing in this.
I don't care. It's funny. It's funny and entertaining and like, He's
an old guy who's just he's the old guy at the club who doesn't belong in
the club. he's the 47-year-old guy who's like telling all the ladies that he's actually 39.
Well, not only that, he's a 47-year-old who had a job and he had the career, but now he's going back to school to get a new degree. And he's decided to rush a fraternity.
Also, he's trying out eyeliner.
Yes.
He's your 48-year-old friend who's suddenly wearing eyeliner and trying to do a goth thing.
I'm going to
and
the goth like, clubs now. What?
And you're like, what is going on? I knew a guy like this. Where I like
oh,
a
so
guy.
Do
who,
I, yeah.
Yeah. Where I was like, huh, really? I thought this was like a 20-year-ago thing. Okay.
Sheamus and Baby Braun Steiner. / Braun
God,
Breaker.
God, that was fun, too. God, Braun Breaker. I mean, everything in that Breaker segment was super entertaining. Sami Zayn and Breaker have great chemistry. Sheamus and Breaker have great chemistry.
Ludwig Kaiser
and Braun have great chemistry. Yeah. I know. Like, I like the idea of now Ludwig Kaiser hates Braun Strowman. Like, I'm actually kind of here for that match. He should lose at the end of it, but Kaiser should actually like quietly hate Braun Strowman. Like he never lets this go. Like this should be a thing.
Like a grudge that eats him.
A grudge. Yes. Right. Like this is just a forever thing where like Strowman occasionally gets just attacked by Kaiser because when you interrupt Kaiser in his little glory run around thing and humiliate him, he can't let that go.
Yeah, he's vainglorious and has always been. That's why he also Oh, that reminds me. I miss Giovanni Vinci.
I do miss Vinci. Vinci was a quality thing. It's just like so many good B-level stuff going on here. Zayn continues to be great.
Let me ask you this, because this is something that I questioned a bit, because a lot of the discourse last week late was fighting between Mike Johnson and Dave Meltzer about Ricochet, and had he given notice, and had he given notice, blah blah blah, but his contract is up. We know he's kind of a free agent. Why did they show all the Ricochet stuff if you don't think that he's not coming back?
I thought that was really interesting. Like, and commentary even said we might not see him ever again.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Well,
that smells to me.
It smells like he's coming back, and like essentially, the wrestling press, those dogged journalists that they are, might be getting worked.
I mean, if he's not coming back, why do you let Samantha take the week off to be with him for his injuries, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just one of those things where I'm watching this. I'm like, I like the recap. Ilya's always great. I don't care what anybody says. I don't think anybody.
Man, if you're in the anti Ilya camp, I got nothing.
We're not friends.
I'm not the guy you're looking for,
but yeah. it's one of those things where I'm like, I'm watching, I'm going, I know Triple H respects the hell out of him and would like him back and wants to keep things on good terms with his lady. But this is something that no wrestling company does in terms of a goodbye for the most part, unless you are a top, top level star and you've decided to hang it up and go elsewhere.
Well, more importantly, I mean, it's not just like a top level star that you're hanging up. It's that showing the crushing defeat of said character is integral to building the other person. And Braun Breaker does not need to break Ricochet to be established.
He can break other people.
He's fighting with Sheamus. He's already oriented against Sami Zayn. Like, there is no, it's not like, oh, Braun Breaker ended the career of the great Ricochet, the man whom we saw have prestige matches against Logan Paul. And also...
Randy Orton.
Randy Orton. Wherein he took spots, essentially, and did spots. A flying into the RKO, a flying crossbody into the other guy who's doing a crossbody. Like, this is not the prestige talent. This is not like if it's 1997 and you're trying to get, I don't know, like Kane over, and you want to do this by ending the career of Vader on WWF television, something like, which I know they did that really badly.
Yes,
but like
they did.
The idea would be like Kane needs to come out and like cripple Vader, and like that becomes a thing that we just talk about. And it's like, wow, I can't believe he did that. Having established Vader as his presence, this is problematic as an analogy for numbers of reasons. I'm aware of that, but like there need to be a reason. Like, if you beat the Undertaker, you need to be establishing the next person and really be getting over. Well, this is why we're doing this. You know?
Okay. Bloodline secondary hits, and then we'll go into Vader Club, and then we'll end this thing.
Yeah.
I loved that both Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa were kind of nervous about Jacob Fatu being in the Bloodline. I loved the Heyman Solo Sikoa interaction.
Heyman and Solo. Oh shit. That was
you want to leave?
Honestly, the part where he's like, "Wise man, I hate to tell you this because I love you." Like, that was so
yes.
It was so
Roman's
not coming back.
He is far better at his delivery than I ever thought he could be when he first showed up and wasn't speaking at all.
Heyman enhances him, and he's good. Like, yeah, no,
his confidence is oozing out of this role as kind of the cool new school gangster type who's taking over for like the old mafia types. It's really, yeah, he's not coming back, and he just walks off, and you go,
and then makes hump. Yeah, I know. It's that I like that of like, damn. And then like the whole thing of he's the only one who's talked to Roman so far, and like even that, I think we're ultimately gonna find out he never talked to Roman.
No, he never talked to Roman.
It's all a lie.
This week on Vader Club, Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson with J.J. Dillon versus Sting and Barry Windham from a show that was kind of the bridge between the Sunday version of 605 and NWA main event, which would later come. This is called Super Bouts. I am not saying that this is a great match by any means. This is a macaroni and cheese comfort food type of match for me that just sits in my stomach and makes me happy, because there are two things on this that I absolutely adore that I don't see a lot of in professional wrestling. It combines both competency on the part of the heels with some unrepentant stupidity on the part of the heels. That it's a story.
Are you talking about the over the top rope spot? Because yeah, that is so hilarious.
I'm talking about the through line story of this being about Tully Blanchard. Number one, Barry's fantastic. Sting's still a little bit green here.
He has a good drop kick.
He's still very good. No, the ridiculous in match story of what is a legal tag and Tully trying to get a tag with Arn when he's not on the apron. And he just there's a moment in there where he just gives Barry a look and he gets frustrated that he can't beat Barry Windham straight. So he's trying to tag Arn in, but and Arn doesn't want to tag in at that moment because Arn's just like, nah, he's too hot right now. I ain't going in there for that. So he's like reaching down on the floor and tagging Arn Anderson, and Tommy Young's going, no, you can't do that. And then it's like it becomes a running narrative. It's basically a house show match, but of Tommy Young telling Tully, no, this is how you have to do the tag, blah, 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 blah. And Arn comes in at some point, and he throws him out, and Tully comes in just to tag Arn. Literally, J.J. Dillon's putting over this match the entire time on the
thing. Tommy Young on his knees watching the tag, like watching finger tags.
Finger tags, yes.
You're right. Like, this is not a, this is not like a Vader Club match like last week, but like what makes this match very fun for me is the heels are perpetually engaged in what are the nuances of the rules, so that realizing early, like initially Tully and Arn think, hey, we can beat these guys.
Yeah.
And then they realize, no, we're not going to win this. We're actually outgunned. But slightly, but maybe we could win on a technicality. I love, you like the tag spot. I love when Tully simulates as though he was Irish whipped so hard that he went over the top rope, and you have Arn and Tully arguing that that's an over the top rope rule violation. We win. We win. They've got their hands up. It's so good.
I saw that and I smiled and I went, but it's also like when Arn gets in there, he's really pummeling Barry with punches. It's not just like,
the standoff, like when let's say Sting and Blanchard are kind of like squared off, like Sting, his punches are a little weird, but like they kind of work. They kind of actually have some fire to them. So
I will warn with the Sting and Blanchard stuff. There's a little stuff that in modern parlance would be considered homophobic.
Oh yeah.
The crowd riled up at the time that hey, maybe Tully's a little not much of a man against Sting, et cetera, et cetera. I get
it's,
it.
It's really unfortunate that like, okay, like essentially Sting could have done your chicken, buck, 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 buck,
yes, yes, but he went but with.
It, yeah, he instead went. Yeah, he instead
kids
went
with. In the late 80s, it was a little bit more. Yeah, but
yeah,
anyway.
Right,
it
yeah,
doesn't
no,
make
but,
it right. I'm not
no,
saying
no,
that.
No, but that is definitely a beat in the match.
But it got
it
this crowd hot for that, totally. Too. I mean, but. And then, of course, the end is, hit with a shoe / DQ, throwing a guy over the top rope, which. And chat, they're arguing the spot beforehand to then throw Barry Windham over the top rope because, hey, we can't beat these guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, J.J. Dillon, also super entertaining, where he is oscillating from doing commentary to helping cheating.
Yes. And he's talking about the usage of his shoe, where I had a rock in my shoe and I felt uncomfortable with it, so I had to take it off for a while, type of a thing.
But like J.J. Dillon on commentary holding Tully Blanchard as he's got a figure four leg lock,
yes,
like
yes.
And he's like calling spots.
And Shivani was on play-by-play, right? Am I remembering that correctly? Right. Yeah, and Shivani was great here. Trying to basically just call out Dylan on all his crap. Dude.
Yeah, the incredulity of watching someone literally cheat in front of you all on microphone and on commentary. This isn't happening, Tony.
No, it was just, but there's that moment after the first flurry where you see just Blanchard just kind of go, you know, clenches his fist and just goes, bah. And I went, oh my God, that is so good. You don't see that from heels because heels are always in control or whatever, with the exception maybe of MJF. But you get the NXT level 3-0 face from, oh my God, I can't believe you did that to me kind of thing. But it's just the subtle little, man, we're evil and we're good, but maybe tonight's not our night. So maybe we need to think of something else.
Right. Like this, it's like, I'm out. Like I would prefer to, I like the type of heel who would straight up prefer to win clean enough and play with their food a little bit. Like their straight up preference would be to have an exhibition where they're never in any real peril and they get to play with their food a little bit and look good. And then you have a situation like this where they're against a good baby face and the good baby face forces them to cheat because they know that they're outclassed. Yes. And they don't want to admit that. That actually bothers them. It bothers them. Like they cheat. They cheat not because they were born cheaters who are just born evil. They cheat because they like winning so much.
Yes.
It pisses them off that they can't win clean and they would rather win dirty than lose.
Yeah. So I believe that's on YouTube. If you Google Tully Arn, Barry Sting, you'll get it eventually. It's not like the first. There's a lot of the Miami Mayhem clash, which is I think Dusty and Sting versus Tully and Arn, but it's a fun little watch. And I believe I put it in on the Shake Them Ropes channel on our Discord through Voices of Wrestling. I also put it on the Twitter account. For then that's where I'll be updating matches once we decide. Chris will have a pick next week. I'll update as soon as I know it so that you guys can watch along and give us your thoughts if you agree with us on our opinions or not. But that's gonna do it for this week's Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. You can follow me at Crap Game 13. Again, you can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, and we do recommend you join the Voices of Wrestling Discord, join our channel there, talk to at least me. Chris may pop in eventually, once again, someday. You never know. He doesn't like
once every six. Once every 6 months is pretty good. I mean, ever since I retired from Twitter. Don't worry about the government. Oh, yeah, and Twitter. Yeah, I think it's fair to say I like talking less.
You can follow Chris on Instagram though, and all his pictures at @DOCTOR_NOV. That's Dr. Nove. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I do another show on the Fight Game Media Network called The Dynamite Show. About 20 minutes after Dynamite, we go live on YouTube and it drops in your podcatchers later. It's called The Dynamite Show. It's very clever. But that's Fight Game Media. That's available on all your available podcatchers. Chris has other interests of note. He's going to tell you about them now.
Yeah, I'm teaching guitar lessons. If you're all interested in guitar lessons, by all means, hit me up. Actually, I have a music lecture thing coming up here on June 30th. If you are interested in the band Wire, I will be doing a little 2-hour music lecture on their first two albums, both Chairs Missing and Pink Flag. Why are we not doing 154? Because I re-listened to 154 this week and I still don't like it after all these years. Tried. It's just not for me. I want to talk about the two albums that I think are quite wonderful, have a lot of interesting songwriting and compositional things that are unique to that band. So that is a 2-hour lecture. It will be occurring. Let me get my dates up here just real quickly so that I know what I'm talking about. It will be occurring on the 30th at 11 a.m. Mountain Time. So that's like noon Central and 1 on the Eastern Coast. And if you're international, I don't know, use a clock. But hit me up if you're interested in that. Also, you can get an archival version of that as I will be recording it. But if you've ever been interested in the post-punk band Wire, this is the lecture for you. And if you've ever wanted to be interested in the post-punk band Wire, this is the lecture for you. And if you've ever wanted to give me $25 for 2 hours of music content, this is the lecture for you. So there's so many different pathways for you to find yourself with me on the 30th, around noontime in the Americas here. So please hit me up if you are interested at instagram.com/DOCTOR_NOV. And if you're not interested, I don't care. Go to hell.
We'll be back with a preview of Forbidden Door next week.
I don't care. Go to hell.
Cheering at pro wrestling shows in Japan is back, and 2023 is already shaping up to be a big year in the history of pro res. That's why you should listen to the Emerald Flow Show. From the Royal Road to the Green Mat, Paul and Gerard take you into the world of All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not only do we analyze events, but we examine business, who is getting over, what angles are working or not. Occasionally, we take a look at other Japanese promotions like DDT and Zero One. So if you're looking for more coverage of the world of Japanese wrestling, check out the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on all of your favorite podcast apps.